I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and all sorts of other things.
Do you know what? I realised there's a guy who does a lot of auto electrician work for me who's lovely, and I'm not going to tell you his name, but he's in my phone as the non-stop talker, and he's really lovely. But I remembered that although his electrician skills in cars are unrivaled, he is brilliant and very logical. He adds that the term "on that side of things" to the end of every sentence. and after about half an hour, it gets to the point where I have to go away and have a walk on my own. But if you say "on that side of things" again...
But sometimes, surely that must make little to no sense in the context of, I don't know, yeah, my brother's just bought a Vauxhall Insignia, on that side of things.
Yeah, no, but that's exactly what happens.
On that side of the family.
Yes, you can manipulate it however way you like. It still sort of works.
Yeah, I've just been walking down the canal, not on the north bank, you know, the other bank with the Rising Sun pub on it. That's where I went, on that side of things.
Yeah,
sometimes
it's so
it makes
true.
Perfect sense.
Yeah, so I've got a customer's MOT and the aircon needs replacing, so I've got to do that this afternoon, on that side of things. And you go, well, ordinarily you would go, that doesn't work, but it seems to conversationally work.
Yeah,
on that side of things. Yeah. So
very
anyway,
sorry to hear about the passing of your grandmother, on that side of things.
Can't talk about family death and just tack on silly like sentences at the end, on that side of things. No, you can't do that.
It's like, didn't I mention a few months ago the bloke who came to fix my guttering, not a euphemism, on that side of things. But the bloke who came to fix a busted gutter that I had kept saying, do you know what I mean, after everything.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was the same thing. I eventually had to go, sorry, mate, I've got to go inside and just sit in a dark room for a little bit. Because if it came... I was going, yes, I do know what you mean. I mean, if he's going, yeah, you want a bevelled spill trunnion on that. Do you know what I mean? I'd be like, no, actually, I don't know what you mean. Don't know what that is. Sorry.
Got no idea. Sorry, mate.
To me. But he went, yeah, so the other problem is there were some leaves up there. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I know what leaves are. Yeah.
If that makes sense, is another one that gets tacked on the end.
Yes.
But because it's tacked onto every sentence, just like what you just said, there are very obvious things that most adults in the world would understand. So, like, I'm going to clock off at 2. I've got to go into town to get some cable, and then I'll be straight back. Right? If that makes sense, we go, of course, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, like, what part of it is really complex? I don't understand.
I don't know whether you realise, but when you were telling me the bit about going into town, you just started speaking in Swahili. So, no, it doesn't make any sense to me at all.
I've got no idea.
I find myself sometimes rereading emails before I send them and taking that kind of thing out, because I suddenly think, because it's taken you a while to type a series of what feel like complicated instructions or directions, that it's natural to then sign off with, hope that all makes sense. And then you kind of go, you reread it and go, a child could figure this out. It's basically going, just take a left turn when you see the railway bridge, straight up to the orange gate, and then another left and you're there. Hope that makes sense. No, I don't understand what 7 of those words mean, because I'm a dog.
Exactly. I'd rather just put any questions, just give me a shout.
No, don't do the give me a shout bit. Just put any questions. It's slightly aggressive. It's like you're challenging them. I dare you to ask me a question.
Yeah, you flipping losers who don't understand basic linguistics.
Make the instructions needlessly complicated and then aggressively end with any questions.
You sometimes get that in car manuals, you know, like owner's manuals, the ones that are in the glove box when you buy a car that pretty much nobody reads.
No.
Or you might read them on the first day of car ownership when you've got that lovely, exciting, bubbly feeling, like, oh, it's all new and it's nice. And I've actually sat and read one before, because I did it with the Jimny, actually, when we got the Jimny. Some stuff is a direct translation, I think, from Japanese.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't quite make, it actually doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And on that side of things. And I always think, why don't they just go down the diagram route? Because diagrams are universal. It would save you so much money in translations. I apologise to anyone listening to this whose profession is translation. But I just think, why not just go with a diagram?
But when car manuals have those really nice, clear, simple line drawings in them, I do enjoy those.
I love them. I absolutely love them.
They're beautifully done, aren't they?
Yeah, they're really beautifully done. And you can understand. Tamiya has always been the master of that with their instruction booklets, because they're all drawn diagrams rather than words.
IKEA's the same.
Yes, IKEA is the same. Yeah. And I do enjoy that. Although there is something nice about going into an owner's manual and it's saying things like, you know, when you first start the car up every morning or when it's cold, drive for the first 5 miles quite carefully, shifting at no more than 2,600 RPMs. And you think, has anybody ever done that?
I know. But you know what? I've seen things like that and I always think, they've put this in here so that when the car breaks, they can say, and for the first 5 miles every morning, did you use no more than 2,650 revs? And you go, so your warranty is invalid then, I'm afraid. Goodbye.
I'm afraid. Yeah, goodbye. Sorry, not sorry. It's exactly that, isn't it?
I think a lot of people, you know, you go, oh, and a car's got a 10-year anti-corrosion warranty. But there's usually a stipulation that you have to have it checked by a dealer every year for 10 years.
I'd say, I think if it was a early noughties Mercedes, I think the official stipulation, you have to get it checked every 3 working days. So, you have to go, hi there, I saw you on Monday, it's Wednesday now.
Tomorrow, is that okay?
Yeah, I just want to see, there's a stone chip on the bonnet. It's just a normal stone chip, I've been driving on the motorway, but can you just check it's not going to rot into a hole in the next 2 weeks?
Since I last saw you, 3 days ago? Yeah, that stone chip has become a dinner plate-sized brown circle. Should I be worried? Oh, sorry, that's not covered, mate. It's bonnet isn't covered. We're going away for 2 weeks in the car on holiday.
I'm a bit worried it's going to dissolve.
That's your warranty invalidated, my friend, I'm afraid. Mercedes.
What you're saying is you can't go on holiday or go on any work trips if you want to keep the warranty up on your paperwork.
No. Oh, and if you look in the manual of a 2002 E-Class, I think it says don't drive through any puddles, and if you do, immediately stop and pat the car down with kitchen paper.
Oh yeah, that's a very valid point, actually.
Very valid point.
Yeah.
Speaking of reading car manuals, I just remembered a long time ago, like more than 20 years ago, my first job in sort of the car world. I think it was the nicest car I'd borrowed to date. A Jaguar.
The nicest.
Yeah, Jaguar XKR.
Yeah.
Do you remember the original shape XK? And I borrowed this red XKR Cabrio. Ooh, it was a nice car at the time. Really nice car. Quick as well. Felt really quick. And I loved it, and I had it for a few days. And I remember I was so into it that one evening when I got home, I took the thick and luxuriously bound manual out of the glove box and I went and ran myself a bath, and I lay in the bath reading the manual.
Oh, gosh.
So if the Jag press office got back an XKR in about 1998 or 99 and they went, the manual seems a little damp, that's weird, it's because a 23-year-old saddo read it in the bath.
I mean, I can relate to that. I'm a little bit ashamed to admit it out loud on a public production, but I can see the attraction of that. It's the want of knowledge, isn't it? It's wanting to know more. But, so I can totally.
But I've never read a car manual that is anything less than staggeringly dull. You always hope there's something in there that's fascinating or unusual or interesting, and there sort of just isn't.
Were you single at the time, Rich? I've got to ask.
Yes, I was. Yes, I was.
Okay.
I don't know why you had to ask that.
I just feel like I ought to have done it on that side of things.
Yeah, on that side. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I had to dig out the manual for my Range Rover the other day when I first got it, because I couldn't figure out how to pair my phone to it. It doesn't pair in the way that most cars do now, where the car can see the phone and the phone can see the car, and you just sort of decide which one you want to lead the charge on, the whole pairing process.
Yeah.
It's really funny, my Range Rover, because it's got sort of all the tech on it that you'd expect today, but because it's 11 years old, you realise it's from a point when all that tech was quite new and they were still sort of figuring out the best way for everything to work.
So yeah, I know what you mean.
The way you pair the phone is you wait for the phone to see the car and then you just do it that way. The car never admits that it can see the phone first. It's like a school disco. It's just sort of sitting around trying to be cool.
Yeah, Bluetooth pairing, some cars have got it down to a T, haven't they? In fact, what was I in? Oh, I was in a Peugeot 508 a couple of days ago.
Ooh.
And
I saw a 508 saloon yesterday. What a nice looking car that is. I'd forgotten.
It's one of the... Well, and I had the Spoutz engineered version.
Spoutz!
Which is the Spoutz. Although in French, what would it be if you... How would you say sport in French?
Jouer? No, that's play, isn't it? What's sport? Sport.
Which, how would you say the word sport?
Du sport.
But in with a French accent?
Sport.
Le sport.
Sport.
Le sport. Sport. Sport.
Sport.
So the sport-engineered 508, which is even better looking than the normal 508, which is probably one of the best looking non-exotic cars on sale, I would say.
Yeah,
it's just
it,
fantastic.
Is the sport trim all sort of murdered out? Because the one I saw yesterday was all blacked in, you know, shiny.
It was decloamed. It was.
Yeah.
And it looked really, really,
really nice.
Solid. Yeah.
Really nice. Like, it's funny, actually, because, you know, none of us have really been out and about much, have we? But for legit work reasons, I've had cause to drive about in the past week more than I have in the past year, because I've been going up and down to Earl Street because we've been shooting a TV show up there, and I've sort of seen cars, other cars on the road, and that's I saw the 508 yesterday, and I've seen two of those Cupra Tormenta things that I don't understand the point of at all.
No, I don't.
And then last night I saw a Leon, but from a distance I thought it was another Tormenta. And I kind of go, what is the fucking point of them going to all this effort with Cupra? Oh, Cupra's a separate brand. It's not Seat. And then they use exactly the same design language. I don't get it. What are they doing?
Well, it's a criminal waste of money, I would
Isn't
suggest.
It? It's just it annoys me how stupid it is.
Well, just spend that money on just better product.
Exactly.
Better core product.
Yes.
That's the way I mean, and as a seasoned business person, I think people should take notice of what I'm saying.
On
very,
that side
very
of things.
On that side of things. I doubt it. You beat me to it, you bastard. Yeah, exactly. So,
just making you some toast, Johnny. Do you want some jam on it? Yeah. Just put some jam on that side of things.
Oh yeah. So it could be even better.
Don't put jam on both sides. That's.
No, who would double jam? I mean, come on. That's just...
I mean, you'd have to eat it with a very large, like a pair of tongs or something, otherwise you'd just get jam all over your hands.
Yeah, you would. Those sort of claws, like they're like a tweezer, but they're more knurled, that jewellers used for picking up very large diamonds and rubies. Those sorts of things. I don't know what you call them.
I bet they've got a jeweller's name. Can I use your tweezers? They're not called tweezers. They'll have a French name, won't they?
They will.
They're called Julius. No, they're not. Yes, they are.
They're called Julius.
Julius.
I will kick you in the Julius if you touch my jeweler's tweezers again.
I'll smack you in the loop. What was I going to say about being out and about seeing cars? There was something else I was going to tell you about, and I can't remember now. Oh, well, only that. I had to do a bit of a longer drive. I had to go to another meeting that was a bit further away. And I did a bit of cross-country driving in my 911, which was lovely.
Of course you did.
And
lovely, lovely
and
car.
And it sort of reminded me, you know, it's a nice car. And it's just, yeah, it's good.
Sweet car.
But a couple of nights before that, I don't really drink in the week, but it was it would have been the weekend, actually. It was last weekend.
Have you started drinking again?
Oh, yeah. I'm having a drink now and then, but, you know, trying to be... My wife's got a new policy. My wife's never sort of fully reined it in, but she doesn't, you know, she might have a gin and tonic or two of an evening. But she was like, yeah, I probably should drink a bit less, but I've got a new policy now summer's here. My new thing is not drinking indoors. I was just like, you're just going to sit in the garden all night then, aren't you?
What, with a rug over your legs? Yeah.
Aren't you cold? No. I was last Saturday night, I guess, and I'd had a couple of adult beverages, and I suddenly decided, I think my wife had gone to bed, and I was like, oh, screw it, I'm going to go online, and I looked, and I found a GR Yaris that's actually in stock at a Toyota dealer that is for list price.
Is it 60,000?
No.
Pissing joking.
I think.
It can't be list price.
If you look around, there were a couple, actually, I think. But I found one that was black. I'd want a black one, I think. And I looked at it and I was like...
Did you buy it?
No, I didn't. Oh. But what I thought was... I seriously thought, I was like, it was list price. I think Toyota must have said to their dealers, no cheeky profiteering on this. Because there's some fuckwits have got, you know, the independent dealers have got them up for, yeah... you know, 40, 50 grand. And you just go,
yeah.
You see your neck, wind it in, my son, on that side of things.
On that side of things,
but
exactly.
Toyota dealers, if you can find, I guess, their cancelled orders or whatever, they occasionally seem to
Cancel orders?
Cancel orders, no. Cancelled orders.
Oh, what have they ordered them for? Local authority use only? That'd be brilliant.
Yeah, closes early on Wednesdays, mate, this Yaris, sorry. I found one. I was like, do you know what, if it wasn't night time and I wasn't drunk, I'd just get in my 911, I'd drive over there and I'd go, I'll do your swap, let's switch, I'm having that, I want that, I'll chop in the 911.
Would you swap for the
Porsche? At that point I was like, fucking serious, yes, this is what I'm going to do. And then next morning I was like, actually no. And then I drove my Porsche and I was like, oh, it's nice, this, isn't it? It is nice.
Was it the gin and the wine talking?
It was the gin. It was, yeah.
It was,
yeah. I've been drinking gin, actually. Maybe that's it. Don't drink gin. But, yeah, if the man from the Toyota dealer then knocked on the front door at 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday and gone, hello, I was just passing and I've got a GR Yaris competition pack here that's a cancelled order. Would you want to swap your Porsche for it? I'd have gone, yes, where do I sign at that precise point? But I've
didn't even leave the house, though. You just hang the keys out the window. You go, I'm not coming out to it. Can you just put the keys through the door?
I haven't got any shoes on. I'll just throw everything out. I don't know, but it's still living in the back of my head a little bit. The thing is, my wife would kill me because she loves that car. She loves the 911. And she's no interest in the Yaris whatsoever.
I was going to say, I mean, my rule that I set up several years back was typically, I think, females tend to not really care about rally homologation cars. If you show them, if I show my wife an Integrale or an Quattro, it's just a horrible box. It's just a horrible... Why would I be attracted to the horrible box?
Yeah.
And I think it's because we're... A lot of car perverts are attracted to the capabilities of the box, not the actual aesthetics of the box.
Yeah. That said, I sort of feel if I could get my wife to drive a GR Yaris, I think she'd like it, because I think it would remind her... It would take her back to her old Fiat 500, which was a manual and it was small. And she has admitted to me she misses that car because she misses driving a small, manual, nippy, but not super fast car. So I think...
Oh, okay.
The cut of the GR Yaris jib might appeal to her, but it would be a struggle to get her to that point because she'd be going, well, it's ugly and it's a Toyota. Why would you sell a Porsche to get a Toyota? I don't know.
I can see that. Are you feeling... I felt like lately you've been kind of dancing with the idea of parting with the 997.
Yeah, I don't know, but then that's the thing. Then I drove it and I went, yeah. The other thing is the other thing I've been vowsing, particularly after an adult drink, is just newer 911s and just going, maybe I should just chop it in for a newer one because it's getting older. And I just sort of think, well, you know... even, I think it's a pretty well-made car, but when things do need, just, you know, natural wear and tear occurs and things need replacing and mending, it's just, it gets more and more expensive, and, you know, there ain't no
I'd
such
go
thing
older
as a cheap. Well, I'd go older. I mean, but that's kind of a bit out of my price range now. I think I'd go for a 964 if you could find a nice early one that hadn't been fucked with.
What would a 993 cost you? Would you get any 993 if you sold yours?
Maybe. I don't know. I'd stopped looking at 993s because I'd become a bit obsessed with getting a 964. I don't know why, but I just... Or go way back. I found a... Became a bit fixated a while back with 912s. I don't know why. I mean...
912s, yeah.
Yeah, 912s. That's it.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said it like that.
If you like 964s, you must watch the next episode of The Late Break Show. There's... I do an episode with a guy with his little sort of... It's not a collection of cars, I suppose. It's like his garage, what's in his garage. And he has a very, very... In fact, one of the nicest-looking 964s I've seen.
Oh.
Yeah, and bought it for an embarrassingly cheap amount of money 2012.
Yeah.
When nobody wanted them.
Was it 2012? Because I think 2012 they felt like they'd sort of... Because I remember, I think I've told you this before, I was in America and it was bizarre, but I was at a birthday party and there was a guy there who worked at Singer. And I got talking to him and I said, I've met Rob Dickinson, who is Mr. Singer, a couple of times. And he's always said, if you're in the US, drop in. And this guy went... Well, we could go and see him now if you want. He's only down the road, and they're there working late because they're getting ready for Pebble Beach, which was sort of the next week. And so we jumped in. He had a 964 Targa, like a really nice ratty one, and we jumped in that, and we drove down to the Singer place, and they were all there, and we saw them prepping their show cars for Pebble Beach, and had a beer, and it was very weird because I went with my wife's brother, and. Rob from Singer refused to believe that my wife's brother wasn't someone famous, but he couldn't place who. And it really freaked my brother-in-law out.
Really?
Yeah. Because he turned to me, oh, this is Jeremy, this is my brother-in-law. And he went, all right, do I know you? He went, no, I don't think so. Went, oh, okay. And then we carried on, he showed us around some cars. And then he went, what are you, I know you, you're famous. Jeremy went, no, I'm not. No, I work in IT. Okay,
this was Robert's. I can't imagine singer Rob actually doing that.
Yeah, like in a really friendly way, but it was like I think he thought I was taking the piss, and I brought like a crudely disguised Brad Pitt down to look around, and I was pranking him. I don't know, it was really odd. But yeah, then as we were leaving, he went, "Are you sure you're not famous?" And Jeremy went, "No, I promise you, I'm really not." But it was all a bit.
Are you sure you're not famous?
So the reason I bring this up is because that was around 20. Ooh, that would have been about 2012, I think.
Well, that was the start of it, wasn't it? Really?
And I went home, or went back to the house we were staying in that night, and started looking up. I was like, right, when we get back to the UK, I'm going to go and buy a 964, because those are obviously 964s are what Singers are based on.
Yeah.
And I looked them up, thinking they'd be $7,000, because no one wants a 964. And they'd already started the climb. They were more than I thought. Although, thinking back, they were probably much less than they are now. I mean, they're...
Well, they would have been about 10.
No, or, I think they were sort of 30, maybe. I don't know. I'm trying to think back. See, I'd want a really early 964 with the flat mirrors and those flat-faced Design 90 wheels, as they call them.
Oh, Design 90s. Yeah, Design very good 90s. For mirror polishing.
I just think they look great as they were launched, and I don't so much care for the later. And what a lot of people do is put the later sort of aero look mirrors on early cars and put all manner of horrible wheels on them and clear indicators and stuff. And I want to be a purist and have a properly unfucked with.
Of course, if you wanted to go for the super pure, very early 964, you just get a Beetle.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Oh, okay. Is that like in the words of Meatloaf, I do anything for love, but I definitely won't do that.
Yeah, I just won't do that.
I won't stoop there.
I've just gone on Car and Classics. I was going to look at 964s while we're talking. And the first thing that comes up in one of their live auctions is a 1968 Beetle semi-automatic.
I remember them. They did do the semi-auto.
Rarity, isn't it?
Yeah, it's rare, but nobody cares, unfortunately.
I bet they're shite, aren't they?
bit slushy. I think.
As I get older, I find Beetles less abhorrent. Like, I'm looking at this Beetle and going, that's quite a sweet car. That. It's got very dished wheels on it. I don't know if those are factory,
well,
are they?
Come this year, come and drive mine.
I will.
It might be incredibly anticlimactic. You've got to bear in mind that this, you know, the dampers are probably 30 years old. But yeah, I think as I get a bit older, my vision is a little bit broader on the car and, well, general vehicle appreciation. But I never really cared much about pre-war stuff, and I'm getting more appreciative of that, mostly because my brother's spreading his propaganda. But but there's also that, you know, like I chat with our elderly neighbours, and they reminisce about cars that they bought brand new in whenever, and you think, oh yeah, that's quite cool. And I know you, because you've written your books, you definitely know that sometimes a car can be appealing on one single merit that it possesses, and that can be it's got a very interesting locking mechanism, or it's got a very interesting way that the seats fold down, or there's an incredible upholstery pattern which no other car ever had, and you just go, I bloody love it, just because, you know, like the Renault 5s, the was it the Gordinis that had those beautiful, like, chunky corduroy flame red seats?
Yes, I know what you mean, and I can't remember which. Was it the Gordinis? Maybe, but yeah, corduroy seats. I know what you mean. They were very. It's like an elephant cord.
Yeah, and just because sometimes the car, in its entirety, is average at best, but there's just one thing that just completely turns you on. And the Beetle is, of course, flawed, but it's a bloody well put together car, you know. Even mine, that's like, you know, ratty and been sat for many years in sheds. it's still quite a substantial little thing. It's an egg. It's a little, slightly Nazi egg. That's what it is. Well, you know what? You still get people commenting, going, bloody awful Volkswagens. They should have changed their name because they've still got Nazi connotations. It's like, it hasn't really. I mean, yes, it was developed in the 30s, and yeah, I know Adolf probably, you know, helped it along slightly and gave it the green light. But it doesn't mean to say it's the car of Nazism, is it? That's a bit strong.
Coming up later in session, slightly Nazi egg.
Yeah, but also, nobody shouts about really efficient motorways being Nazi. Nazi,
not going on the Autobahn, it's too Nazi.
Well, it's true, though, isn't it? Yeah.
I'm browsing through 964s. Not many out there of just ordinary 964s in the UK. There's one here for sale in the northeast. I think this has been up for a while, actually, and it's an example of what I'm talking about, where people just fuck with them. It's got some 5-spoke wheels off a later model that don't look very good. It's got aero mirrors and clear indicators, all the basic level fuckwittery that goes on with these lovely early
964s. If the person who's selling this car is listening to the Smith and Stiff podcast, I'm apologising in advance.
It's a dealer
on that side.
I don't
of things.
Imagine they did it. If they did, they should hang their head. They should
apologies
be working,
to the dealer on
working
that side
hard
of things.
To restore it to standard. So, yeah, because it's a red Carrera 2, 1990. I mean, that would be such a pretty car with the proper fucking trim on it. And it's still very nice. But here's the kicker: it's $75,000.
Ouch!
Because it's got 56,000 miles on it. So,
ouch.
Yeah, sorry, but no. Just no.
Do you think we're? I think I can't remember if we mentioned this in a previous podcast, but I do feel like we are possibly on the cusp of there being more Singer 964s than standard 964s.
Yeah, I think so. I'm just reading down this. The dealer is trying to claim that optional extras on this car include the rare cup alloys. They're trying to suggest that those wheels are factory. Now they might be, I suppose, but
well, you can't start that. You have to. Yeah, you have to check. On that side,
there's usually
things,
a sticker
you?
On the car or in the handbook or in some of the paperwork that will tell you the option codes that the car came with, so you can check if that's true or if that's bullshit.
You decode it. That was one of the most satisfying things I've ever done with cars I've bought, like my Dodge and my Chevrolet. You decode it.
Yes,
you decode it, and then any lingering kind of any lingering doubts of like, oh, was it supposed to have had the centre console? Oh, was it supposed to have the green tinted windows? Actually, yes, it was. Welcome to the world.
Johnny Smith, car detective.
Yeah, and it's just that little flimsy printed stamped plate can mean so much, can double the value of a car. It's just weird, but I kind of dig it.
I might take my VIN off
this summer and I might mirror polish it. I've seen people that actually chrome plate the VIN and then rivet them back on.
Really?
Yeah, almost a bit like, I guess, a medallion on a man off of the early 80s. You know, driving a cabriolet with all of the buttons undone on the shirt, listening to a bit of Foreigner or Yes out loud. You know the guy. Every village had one. Yeah. Every town had one. I don't know what he would have been driving at that moment in time, but...
Ooh, I don't know.
With a cheeky little bit of very, very thin necklace. Like my brother said, such a thin necklace that if you were to take a jumper off too quickly, you'd snag it and break it. Yeah. Just like that. You wouldn't even know.
Yeah, just like, it's almost like a hair's breadth.
Oh,
a
it's
hair's
so...
hair's breadth necklace.
Do you know who's got one of those?
Who?
Martin Brundle.
Oh, yes, he has.
Do you remember when we went to Pebble Beach and he was on the trip with us?
Yeah.
He's a lovely guy, really great conversations, but I did notice an incredibly thin necklace.
Yeah, you're right.
I think it's Super Leggera.
Well, that'll be it, isn't it? Super Leggera. Super Leggera.
Because he wants jewelry. The gold, but he doesn't want the weight of the gold.
Yeah.
So it's Super Leggera jewellery.
It makes perfect sense now you mentioned
it. Yeah. I bet Lewis Hamilton's got some incredibly light but still very valuable gold.
Gold's heavy, isn't it? Obviously.
Gold is heavy, Richard. Gold is heavy.
Lighter titanium, I suppose, but it's not really a precious metal, is it?
Titanium, yeah, it's semi. It's not, I don't think, titanium. Platinum's heavy.
Yeah, they're all a bit too heavy for...
They are too heavy. What about, but I mean, does anybody do carbon fibre jewellery? Could you have a chunky flat link bracelet?
I bet they do.
Made of carbon?
They do, yeah.
Like, but you could have gold in the carbon weave, can't you? What's that company that does
Pagani
Mansory?
Does some of that. Oh yeah,
yeah,
but
that's
I think
right.
Pagani do it as well. It's
like gold dental floss in the set into the weave.
I think Pagani did it with titanium in the weave, didn't they? The carbotanium they were calling it. I think. Mm.
So actually, maybe Pagani actually does high end, very light jewellery. Just haven't seen it yet.
I just remembered the other thing I was going to tell you about being out and about on the roads. There's no particular interest, but I made a mental note to tell you, is that I was driving along the other day and this bloke left the road to the left, side road. There's a guy there in an 80s Firebird. And as I approached, he decided to go for it and he did an absolutely massive one-wheel peel out of this junction across my path and going, you know, to turn the opposite way to where I was going. So then he's coming towards me still with one back wheel all lit up, fucking loads of smoke, and you can hear this. And I was a bit like, is he about to Cars and Coffee it? I had this brief thought. I was like, the fucker's about to Cars and Coffee it, and he's going to strike me. He didn't, but I was just like, on the one hand, I was like, fair play to you, sir. And on the other hand, I was like, you absolute helmet. What are you doing?
A problem is a one-wheel peel isn't, it's not that cool aesthetically.
No.
And of course, the engine is absolutely screaming, and one wheel's
screaming.
Not even doing anything.
Yeah, well, actually, one wheel's having to do the business of moving the car, because there was a bus coming the other way as well. The reason he decided to really stand on it was because he was taking his chances to pull out in a little gap. And this was not sort of in the middle of nowhere. This was on basically a high street. So,
okay. High street was slight Belendery.
Yeah, a bit of an anusy move.
On that side of things, yeah.
On that side of things, yeah. But at least he remained on that side
of
the road.
On his side of things.
Didn't come over to on my side of things.
Did you notice the clothing? Was there,
no,
was there clothing affiliated with the era of the car?
In my mind, I feel like he was wearing a trucker cap, but I could be mistaken.
I'd like it if he had a cheeky single earring. You know, the very small cross. George Michael era, Faith.
Yeah.
There'd be a cheeky one of those, but it would be hidden by the sort of the camtail hair.
Yeah, camtail hair, trucker cap, aviators, off-brands, not Ray-Bans, like knock-off Ray-Bans. I mean, that's the, in my head, he had a vest on.
Of course he did.
But I don't know. I think I'm now just sort of filling in mental gaps.
I saw, well, if you want to do cliche clothes for driver, I was waiting to clean a car at a petrol station yesterday on a shoot because it got dirty halfway through. We were filming it. And had to wait for this guy to finish. White Audi S3, brand new.
Mm.
What did he look like?
A white Audi S3?
White S3, brand new.
Huh.
Young, all I'm going to say is young guy. He's definitely under 26.
Suit?
No, like couldn't be further away.
He wasn't wearing a suit?
No. Cuff ankle tracky bottoms.
Oh.
Those sort of trainers with the really deep white soles that look like kind of melted spaceman's shoes. You know where they look like a built-up. They look like a built-up shoe that's had a blowtorch applied to them slightly.
I have orthopaedic shoes, but then I decided as a dare to walk across hot coals, and now look what's happened.
That's exactly that. So then, on that side of things, he had a white vest on, and it was, don't get me wrong, it was warm yesterday, but it wasn't that warm, I don't think.
No.
But coupled with the fact that he didn't have the physique for the vest, like it would be like me wearing the vest. You just look at me and go, what are you thinking? And then, you know, the kind of the Peaky Blinder hair. So grade zero at the side.
Yeah.
So sort of B-side boy band in a way. And he was power lancing around his Audi S3.
Okay. Yeah, no, I get it now. I went suit because I was like, that's sort of estate agent territory, I think.
I think that
done the good estate agent.
S-line hatchback and RS-line hatchback Audis are... They're the new TikTok-y chav thing.
Yeah, no, you're right. There was a surprisingly young lad round here. I haven't seen him for a while, but then I've probably been out and about so much. But he had an S3 Saloon, which is a nice-looking car, I think.
Yeah.
But he always used to have it in Spoet.
Spoet.
Because he'd had it full, you know, whip crack on the gear changes and fruity exhaust all the time. And he used to drive like an absolute flute everywhere.
Was it strictly first gear?
Yeah, I think.
Gosh, that sounds like a really good BBC dance show. To be strictly first gear only on ice. But I find that the hot Audi owner, they do that though.
Mm.
They drive everywhere in first and second to get the pop bang map really crackling. And because it's one of those cars, because of the Quattro, it does grip really well, and it will hang on even if you've got no talent. You probably haven't got two hands on the wheel.
Yeah, but
you've got your phone on your lap, you've got TikTok on.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I always used to see this knobhead in an SC Saloon. He'd be going past the local park where all the kids are playing, and I just go, don't fucking do that when there's children walking down the street, because I don't trust you to have complete control of that car for the reasons you say. He's busy making a TikTok video, and he's holding it in first on the paddles.
Like, yes, he is. So it's like a racehorse behind the gate, isn't it? Someone's whipping the racehorse's ass and the gate's still unlocked. So locked.
Yeah.
I do feel it's a bit like that. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry if that's... being a little bit prejudiced, I don't know. But that's what this podcast sometimes is for, isn't it? It's our podcast.
Petty grievances.
And if we want to be a little bit prejudiced on that side of things, we will.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was in two minds about whether to bring this up, but have you seen this whole thing that was kicking off last week about Volkswagen?
Yes. It came out in the morning and I didn't see it until towards the end of the day, but I had a quick scroll through and I immediately called bullshit on it.
Yeah.
But of course, the more it went on and the more people, it really divided people. Like people who are solo EV, you know, the only pro electric cars, they really embraced it.
Oh, really?
And although I'm pro electric car, I still said, come on, you're not changing the name of your company because of that, because there's still going to sell piston cars for a good while.
Yeah.
So it's, I call BS on it. If it was a subdivision, I could sort of understand that. Because don't get me wrong, I'm not enamoured by the ID name, moniker. Mm. It's not the greatest, is it?
No. Everyone got very radgy, though, I thought, on social media. People, initially, they're going, oh, it's ridiculous, I can't believe they're doing this. And I was thinking, I don't think they are. This feels like it's all, you know. And here we are talking about it, so tick, job done. But then it sort of came out that it was supposedly an April Fool's gag released early and all sorts of things.
Went
I don't
early,
even know
yeah.
if that's true. I think that it's... Maybe it was all carefully engineered because, again, everybody was talking about it. And the one thing they want to do is just raise awareness. Bear in mind, this supposedly came from Volkswagen of the US. It wasn't a global thing or from Germany. This was just the US branch office getting a bit giddy because they want Americans to know that they are now selling electric cars. And it's like, well, they've kind of done that because I think there's so much hubris that probably people who aren't into cars might vaguely have heard something.
Yeah.
And they'll have heard, what, are they changing them to Volkswagen? Why? Oh, because they make electric cars. Penny drops, job done. So I think we've all been played to some extent. It's just that it slightly backfired because everybody got a bit narky. But that's car nuts getting narky, and they're not normal
they're
people.
They're not normal. And also, I wasn't offended by it. I just didn't believe it.
No, it's just dicking around.
I was offended by what, you know, BMW's PR efforts of the last couple of months. I think that's more offensive, by almost dismissing older customers.
Yeah.
And your own previous models.
Yeah.
It just seemed very odd.
I was reminded of that yesterday because, you know, it's that thing Lee Iacocca, I think, once said, probably around the time he kind of spearheaded the Mustang, the original Mustang.
Yeah,
he said you can sell a young person's car to an old person, but not the other way around, which is why they sort of pursue, you know, youthful ideas. But the truth is that young people don't have any money. It's that Bernie Eccleston thing about, you know, why isn't Formula One doing more on social media and all that sort of stuff? And he went, because young people don't buy Rolexes. And that's kind of changed a bit, because I think there's a sort of, you know,
Cuff ankle, tracky bottom, Audi S3.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's all because borrowing's cheap, isn't it? Surely that's just because interest rates are so low and have been for so long now that borrowing money is incredibly cheap. If you can keep the monthly payments up, you can have an Audi S3.
Absolutely. And that's commonplace. I think there's a big difference between having a thing and owning a thing, isn't there?
Yeah.
And I don't want to sound like an old git, but there's a lot of people out there that don't own a thing.
No. No, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you can finance a flash watch and all sorts, can't you?
A flesh watch.
A flesh watch.
I'm just drawing
a watch on your wrist with a marker pen.
Yeah,
I still write twice a day.
On that side of things, yeah. you're gonna. I want you to say this to your wife for the rest
of
the week.
I know.
Just keep popping
in.
Keep popping in on that side of things. Just keep popping it in.
Anyway, the only thing I was going to say about the Volkswagen thing is that I hear on the grapevine that it was considered all a bit of an ugly fuck up within Volkswagen globally, and that other parts of the VW empire actually aborted their 1st of April jocular press releases that they were going to put out last Thursday because it backfired a bit, so they decided to play it straight. I don't know if that's true. I can't remember seeing any sort of stuff that came out of VW then, but I don't know. I find it all a little bit tiresome.
It's a bit of a swerve avoidance manoeuvre, wasn't it? On the pier. Well, I think Greg James on Radio 1 said it brilliantly. He said, I don't care about April Fool's jokes, because he said we should be having a bit of a laugh and a joke all year round. But not at the expense of like playing a prank on like trying to convince you that your nan's just died when she hasn't. That's not funny and that's not cool. But, you know, like general japes. I guess, I mean, we do it every week because we sit on this podcast and we don't just try and make a joke here and there, but we do have a bit of a... We do lol, don't we? We lol, Richard, on that side of things, don't we?
I can't remember the last time I sort of pranked somebody. I'm trying to remember. Particularly in a car-related way. I was telling someone the other day about years and years ago, I had a girlfriend who had a horrible racist grandma. And
That's nice.
And that's not the prank. The prank is that she was a strange woman, and one of the things that she refused to do was wear a seatbelt. But what she would do? Yeah, she didn't. I can't remember why. She's just bizarre. But what she would do is she would hold the seatbelt around. She'd pull it around her in the normal way, and then she would just hold it with one hand, with the buckle right by the clasp. And you wanted to go, just fucking plug it in. It's already there.
Well, that was sheer defiance, wasn't
it? Because it's like she knew that she had to appear to be wearing a seatbelt in case, you know, the police drove by. This is when she's a passenger; she didn't drive. So one day, I had to give her a lift somewhere, and I was in a press car, and I told her, even though this wasn't true, that the car would not go until all the seatbelts were plugged in.
Oh, you legend!
This was pre-cars binging a lot. This was like the early 2000s, and because she knew that I knew about cars, she believed me, and so she wore her seatbelt, and I spent the whole journey going, ha, I've stitched you up.
Did you ever call her a racist old lady?
No, I didn't. I just quietly died inside. It was after the September the 11th attacks, when she said she didn't feel safe in her own home because her next-door neighbours were Asian, that I really lost the will to live. So, that was the cut of her jib.
Well, that was that's a bullet dodged, isn't it?
Yep.
Which is nice. How do we pick this podcast up?
Sorry. God, I don't know how we recover from that one. I made it a bit more serious than I meant. But, that's not even a prank, really. That was just a sort of white lie to
I actually think
a horrible old racist.
I think that was a good move on your part. I thought it was quite a canny.
Yeah, I attempt. A bit more pleased with myself than I should have been about it, because I was like, I just lied, but it made her do something that really annoys me that she doesn't normally do. So, there we go.
You won.
Yeah, on that side of things, I think.
On that side of things, yeah, absolutely. If you ever bookended, you've got to bookend the line at the front and the beginning. So, yeah. It's like saying so. So, anyway, I think you won
that. Really annoys you, so.
Well, it was the lady I used to work with. It was the so, comma, as I say. But even if you hadn't already said something, still say as I say. But you hadn't said anything. So I find that immediately quite annoying.
I briefly worked with a bloke. He was an Aussie guy.
So.
Who always used to say, well, as I always say. And he'd be like.
You haven't.
Yeah,
also, you haven't and you didn't.
But it was sort of, he was ennobling himself as if he was some kind of legendary inventor of epithets and things, you know. So he'd sort of go, oh, it turns out that shop's closed. And he's like, well, as I always say, it'll be open tomorrow. And you go, that's...
You've never
said that.
You're
trying to make yourself sound wise because it's not really working. He was the guy who, he had a bit of a body odour problem.
Oh.
And mentioned this, a couple of us mentioned this to the senior guy.
To everybody?
No, the senior guy on this project we were working on. And he went, yeah, you're right, yeah, it's a bit of an issue. You know, and we were sort of sitting in rooms together all day and it was a bit uncomfortable. So the senior guy, you know, as the grown-up, the ranking officer in the team, he went, yeah, you've got a point. You know, it's probably something I need to address. Look, leave it with me, okay? I'll tackle it. I'll try and sort of bring this up in a sensitive way, because obviously it's a bit awkward, isn't it? I guess he doesn't realise. So yeah, tomorrow I'll address it. Don't worry, leave it with me. I know what I'm doing here. He just went into his meeting. He went, oh, by the way, mate, you fucking stink.
What?
Yeah, he just came out with it. This guy went, what? And he went, you fucking stink. Get some deodorant. You stink.
That's brilliant.
We were sitting there going, Jesus, I thought you said you were going to tackle it in a sensitive way. And he just came out with it. And this guy went, yeah, I'm actually allergic to deodorant. That's why I can't wear it.
Oh, my gosh. It is so awful.
And it became a situation, as I always say.
He said, you fucking stink.
He went, mate, you fucking stink.
Oh, gosh, I'm embarrassed. I was never there. I don't even know the people involved.
I know. It was, your face goes hot. Like, you're probably not blushing, but you feel hot because you're so awkward.
Yes.
It was that.
It's one of those moments when you test your own pelvic floor.
Yes.
Have you ever done that?
Yeah, yeah. Where if,
you know,
actually,
I don't normally tell people I do that, but I do that sometimes.
If you were sitting on a pencil, you would suddenly suck it up your own anus with awkwardness.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
I had it yesterday. Because I
what,
said
bottom
goodbye
pencil sucking.
Yeah, I sucked a pencil up my ass by mistake, but on that side of things.
On on that side of things. Stop it.
No, I said goodbye to someone, and as I walked away, I suddenly had this moment where I thought, I think I've called them the wrong name.
Oh.
And I hadn't. I got in the car.
And you hadn't?
I hadn't. I got in the car, and I panicked. I went, hang on a minute, is that his name? It's not his name. I've called him the wrong name. And I actually had to get my phone and look up an email, the last email I had from him, to double make sure that I wasn't imagining it, but I had got his name right.
Had you been with him all day?
Yes, I had. That's the worst thing.
That's the thing, because you think, I've been with them for 10 hours and I've still not remembered their name. That's...
Yeah, I know. And I suppose it's the first time I'd met him, you see, so it's kind of, that's where the name... And last week, again, same thing, but I did... thankfully, inaudibly, call someone. I called her Lucy, and her name's not Lucy, but in my head she looks like a Lucy. So, but thank Christ, I think it was.
She looks like a Lucy.
She just looks like a Lucy. I don't know why she looks like a Lucy. That's not an insult. She you know, perfectly.
It sounds like an Aerosmith song.
She looks like a Lucy.
Lucy. In fact, I need to say a big congratulations to my oldest friend, Party Boy, who's just become a dad again, and his daughter's called Lucy. So it just reminded me. I want to say hi, Ed. Hope all's going well. And you make me laugh every time I see you or hear from you. It's brilliant. He's such a cool guy. And I don't know, that was it, really. He's still got two Daihatsu Sharads. He's the only person I know that has two first-generation Daihatsu Sharads.
First-generation?
Yeah, there's apparently there's three in the United Kingdom left, and he has two of them.
Crikey.
Yeah. One of them's in a very bad way, but it's extremely early. Uh-huh. And the other one is an auto, so less desirable, but it's in very good condition. So he's trying to work out, he's trying to put one in with Singer as we speak. They're having none of it.
When will they broaden their palette to...
I don't know. They've got to do
it.
More
interesting cars.
I'm going to bang on the door every few weeks. Just say, come on, I've got old Rancho waiting.
Yeah.
Come on, Rob. Oh, by the way, Rob, my brother's famous. Can you do this Rancho?
Yeah.
That's what we should do. We should use that as a calling card.
I'll go back with my brother-in-law and go, actually, yeah, he is famous. What does he do? Work it out, Rob. I'll tell you when you finish the Rancho, all right?
Yeah. Have you ever used PayPal? And he'll go, yeah. Go, well, it's nothing to do with him. But he's done something similar. That was just a clue.
Really weird him out. Have you ever used BlueTac? Yeah, me too. Right, how's the Rancho coming? do you know what I always wanted was the most recent Sharad before Daihatsu shut up shop here. You know, the really sort of boxy, it's like a big wedge shape.
Did they still call it the Sharad?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, what's his chap? Hubnuts bought one. I don't know if he's still got it. I haven't seen recently, but he bought one.
Yes, I know the one.
When they were new, I remember they came out, and I think we featured it on Top Gear briefly, just because we'd all driven it. Like, even, you know, the presenters had driven it, and we all just went, "That's a really amusing little car." Let's mention.
And was it?
It
was five grand with 3 years warranty,
something like that. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And there was a brief moment where I suddenly thought, I need a little biff about car, and there was a Daihatsu dealer not that far from me, and I just thought, "Fuck it, I'll go and get one of those." And I didn't. I'd even spoken to... I was on an Evo story with all the guys from the office, and Ian Litchfield was there, you know, of Litchfield.
Of Litchfield.
And he has really good contacts in Japan for the sourcing of car parts. And I'd seen that on Japanese Sharads, you could get some sort of, like, mini-light-style alloys. And I even went... Ian, if I bought a Daihatsu Sharad, would you be able to get some mini light style wheels for it from Japan? He just went, yeah, of course, no problem at all. And I was like, well, there we go then. And then I
sorted
against it for some reason or other. I don't know why. It was a whim. It was the same, you know, it's the same possibly having had a drink whim that was made me convinced to swap my 911 for a GR Yaris. I mean, if there are any Toyota dealers listening and they have got a GR Yaris in stock they need shot of, and they'll do a straight swap for a 997 Gen 2 C2S, then try me.
Are you serious? Is this a proclamation?
No, it comes and goes.
It's, oh, okay.
You know.
It's a flaky proclamation.
Yeah. I mean, if someone fronted up and went, yes, I will do you a straight swap, because I sort of feel like they're about the same value. I might be wrong there. I haven't checked recently. But it turns out my 911's worth way more. I'm basically shafting myself. But honestly, I would give away money just to not have to try and sell a car. It's the worst thing in the world. Don't you hate selling cars?
Less so now. I used to really enjoy it. I suppose I'm a busier guy these days. It's not quite so much fun. Thinking of my friend Party Boy that I just mentioned, he's about to sell quite a nice Mark 1 Vauxhall Astra and a Mark 3 Vauxhall Cavalier SRI, if anyone's interested. He's still got a VR6.
VR6 what?
A Golf.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Corrado.
No, not Corrado. He's keeping it real. Three-door Golf. Yeah. And, one of my other mates bought that when it was like a year old.
Oh. Huh.
He started to do well in the world and bought himself a nice red VR6. And Ed bought it off him. He was going to trade it in for a Touran. And we just said, you can't do that because they offered about 12p for it. And Ed said, no, I'll have that off you. But... I do like selling cars, and I don't. But I've got to sell an enormous amount of car parts over the next 6 or 7 weeks, and I'm wondering whether or not you and I should do an auto jumble, if they're happening. So if you used to come up, and I'll borrow a van from a manufacturer, and we'll fill a van, and I'll put labels on everything, and I'll pack you a lunchbox and a big thermos of some decent filter coffee. We can sit in a field and laugh at people, and they can laugh at us. I think that's the general auto jumble vibe.
Yeah, and anything you don't shift, we can just go fly tipping on the way home. I'm joking.
Joke.
I know. We both hate fly tipping.
Fly tipping's the worst.
Yeah, it is the worst. It's just the big worst. Scale littering, isn't it? I mean, it's absolutely unconscionable on that side of things.
On that side of things, we should probably wrap up the podcast.
We probably should. I was going to say, you are interested in any of Johnny's mate's Party Boy's cars that might be for sale, or you want to offer me a GR Yaris in return for a Porsche 911, then email smithandsniff@gmail.com. We do love hearing from you. Also, the other thing is, I really love... some of the emails we get, because people send us funny stories and they genuinely really make me laugh, and I always want to read them out, but then we always get distracted talking shite. So we will at some point get around to that, I promise. So do please keep emailing in. In the meantime, I have three things to tell you. They are: one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called The Late Break Show with many excellent videos upon it. Two, I've got various books out. One of them is called Steel Flies by Roy Lanchester, which is a spoof Cold War thriller. It's available exclusively on Amazon. And three, chart-topping pop act from the 90s, Dr. Alban, is a fully qualified dentist.
Really?
Yes. Genuinely, he used to be a dentist.
That's long been a... What do you mean he used to be? He quit dentistry in order to do that one hit.
His backstory is quite interesting. I can't remember where he was born, but he moved to Sweden. He trained as a dentist whilst also making music. And then, because it was sort of something to fall back on, he went into dentistry while still doing the music, and then the music took off, and he made that his full-time job. But
if you ever
bust a tooth at a Dr. Alban gig, there's a good chance he can help you out.
Wow.
If he's still gigging. I don't know if he is, but anyway, there we go.
It's his life. It's his life. It's his life.
Lower fourth and fifth missing. And sorry, got distracted there. Force of habit. It's my life.
Doctor Dentistry.
Doctor Dentist. Maybe that's where the doctor comes from. I don't know. In some countries, you do call yourself a doctor if you're a dentist, don't you? Anyway, we get distracted. I suppose... Mr. Alban brackets dentist would have been a less catchy name for...
I think there's got to be a few dentists out there who are really into car detailing. I could see that.
Well, they've got all the equipment, haven't they?
There's a correlation there, isn't there, with all the specialist brushes and potions.
Sorry, before you polish my teeth, the brush does seem to smell quite strongly of turtle wax. No, it doesn't.
I'm going to ceramic coat your face next. Is that okay? Yeah, because then all the water will just bead off it. So the faster you walk... the less water will land on your face.
Have you been to see the old dentist? Yeah, how do you know? It was just you've got a magic tree hanging from your ear. Yeah, he does that when he's finished. It's really weird.
It's his life. Yeah.
Dentist. All right. Well, anyway, thank you ever so much for listening on that side of things. And
we'll do all this
again same time next week. Until then, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
On that side of
the things. On the things. That side of...